this recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Merry White House Experience. And Mrs. White House, if you're listening, you were fabulous last night. I'm David Baddiel, and this is Punt and Dennis.
Faster than you can say 6.8p on a gallon of four-star, we plunge into the happenings of the moment. We have a live audience here in the studio tonight, consisting of about 200 people, and thus we've already got better ratings than Channel 4's new breakfast time service. Also offering a new breakfast service this week were British Rail, who are now charging £9.95 for a plate of egg, bacon, sausages and fried bread, all swimming in more oil than an Alaskan seal. Fishermen and conservationists alike are still currently battling off Alaska to stop the spread of the worst oil slick since Bob Monkhouse last got out of the bath.
Major drama earlier this week. Princess Diana had to have her wisdom teeth out. Apparently Prince Charles thought their design was too modern. The princess reappeared in public just in time to see Prince Harry get attacked in a swimming pool. According to the Daily Express, the four-year-old prince was splashing around in a shallow end when he was attacked and kicked in the face. Bodyguards took the weeping Harry away, and police are seeking to interview Brian Clough.
And it was reported that Prince William and Prince Harry will meet Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan at a charity show.
Apparently Neighbours is their favourite programme, which came as a surprise to some commentators who thought Prince Harry would prefer In at the Deep End.
If Jason Donovan starts singing, Harry might well wish he was back in the pool.
Talking of music,
and here the word is being used in its very broadest sense,
at the Grosvenor House Hotel, George Michael accepted a prestigious Ivor Novello Award with the words, "I'm absolutely pissed." He's now been offered a job navigating oil tankers.
And a poster campaign for an Australian aftershave called Sheila, completely invented to test public awareness of poster advertising, has led to a deluge of inquiries about where it can be obtained.
The company who arranged the poster said they're astonished that the public are gullible enough to want to buy something that doesn't even exist. Mrs. Thatcher wants to talk to them about future privatisation.
Now, Crime Stoppers would like to hear from you if anyone has been trying to sell you a cheap second-hand car stereo. How much were they asking? £70? £60? It may sound too good to be true, but be advised. You can get them from me for £25.
Hello, I'm Paul Channon.
This is a man with a curse on him. A sort of negative Midas touch. As a result, he is radically unsuited to his job. Many famous people throughout history have shared this condition. Genghis Khan, who was by trade a social worker. Adolf Hitler, who never really achieved his vocation as a race relations officer. And perhaps most disastrously of all, Bobby Robson, who was originally a football manager. These people just can't get anything right. We spent a day in the company of Paul Channon at his Hertfordshire home in Scotland.
Hello. Welcome to our happy home. I'll just put the kettle on. It seems the kettle isn't working. Let me take your coat. It seems your coat isn't working. Let me show you into the living room.
3 weeks later, we found ourselves in Mesopotamia. One of the most terrible and tragic aspects of Paul Channon's condition is that he always knows in advance that these disasters are about to occur. And yet, he finds himself paralyzed to do anything about it. Rather like a rabbit on the motorway, frozen in the headlights of an oncoming plane. We asked him about this disorder.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, here I am in the kitchen, and I'm quite aware of the fact that that casserole dish is about to fall off that shelf and hit me on the head. But there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. Oh, bugger.
Mr. Channon, what part of your life does your condition make most difficult?
Travel. I find transport very difficult. For example, as soon as I heard about the Lockerbie disaster, I got on a plane straight away. But before I could do anything about it, I was flying to the West Indies for 2 weeks.
How awful.
Yes, I was supposed to be going to Hawaii.
One of the most deranged things which Channon has done under the influence of his condition was that on the 19th of December, 2 days before the Lockerbie disaster, he sent a memo to airport security officers stating that, quote,
if searchers are not satisfied with any item of luggage, they should store it in the aircraft hold.
This is rather like saying, if you suspect something may be poisonous, swallow it. Or, if Paul Channon applies for a job as transport minister, give it to him. The conclusion about Paul Channon has to be this. It says a lot about a transport minister that right under his very eyes, he's got two unattended bags.
Now, the White Lion pub in Romford, Essex. Recently, this pub acquired new owners who spent a lot of time and effort doing it up, with the result that it became a very pleasant place to go to for a Sunday lunchtime drink. All of which makes what happened last Sunday night even more sad. I was banned.
Good evening, this is the Skint Video Experience. We'd like to present our tribute to Big World Cafe, the programme that brings you music from all over the globe.
We give you music that's all over the place, Small World Caf.
To London now for a quick burst of Mandy Smith's ode to Bill Wyman.
Granddad, Granddad, love you. And you've got a few bob too.
And a duet from the Duke and Duchess of York.
Both going on a summer holiday, a new year, spring, late spring, early autumn, midwinter, and a Christmas one as well.
To Bali, Bangkok, Bracknell, or wherever she is now, for a song about Pamela Bordes, star of Ready Steady Goer. After the searchers, it's the researchers.
Oh, Pamela, like Uri Geller, you bent me into different shapes. You could fit in an all-night sitting on top of my face. Oh, Pamela, kiss and tell her my jobless figures you massaged. I had my fill, you gave my bill a really rough passage.
You're into home now to Scotland, where the so-called community charge became law on April Fool's Day, prompting Lord McBigot of John O'Jobbies to update an old folk song.
You paid the low rates and I paid the high rates, 'cause I live in a 50-room castle. But under the poll tax, we both pay the same. That's what the Scots get for not voting Tory.
Hello, I'm the Mary Whitehouse Experience agony aunt. And I've been scanning the papers and magazines for some problems so I can give some answers which I hope will be helpful. And they're all real problems from real magazines. First of all, we've got a very sweet little one from Girl magazine. Dear Girl, I'm 12 years old and I'm worried as I'm flat-chested. All classmates are well-developed and they tease me. Well, Alice from Girl answers, make the most of your slim figure by wearing baggy jumpers. You can't actually do this if you're fat because you look like a lumpy parcel. Cheers, Alice. Somehow I don't think she'd have given that advice if she'd been Claire Rayner. Who looks a bit like a lumpy post office, really, doesn't she? And finally, and again from Girl magazine, dear Girl, I'm 12 years old and have recently chucked my boyfriend because he never spoke to me. Instead, he got a messenger. Plus, he's frigid. 12 years old, whatever happened to the days of innocence? What happened to the days when girls this age wrote into magazines and asked whether you could get pregnant by having sexual intercourse with someone? But oh no, girls these days are dating even before they've left the fetus stage, aren't they? She's chucked her boyfriend, why? Well, probably as a 12-year-old, she wants to concentrate on winning opportunity knocks before she gets too old. And the boyfriend's frigid. Bloody good job, too, or I expect a visit from the old Bill would be well in order. And as for Alice, the agony aunt in Girl, does she think this letter is outrageous? No, of course she doesn't. But I suppose we have to bear in mind that she is only 9 herself. And if there are any 12-year-olds out there listening to this who think I'm a horrible old killjoy of a grown-up, go to bed immediately. Before I come round and smack you in the gob and empty the contents of my stomach onto your bros poster. Thank you.
Good evening and welcome to the South Bank Show. Tonight I'm talking to one of the most neglected composers and lyricists of modern times, David Baddiel, the man who originally wrote all the songs now regularly sung at football matches. Classics of his include He's Fat, He's Round, He's Always on the Ground, Peter Reed. There's only one Cyril Knowles, one Cyril Knowles. Satirical songs such as Where's Your Father, Referee? And his latest and perhaps greatest number, You're So Shit It's Unbelievable. David, what would you say was your central message?
Well, I must say, I'm never quite sure myself, Melvin. An artist often works without a knowledge of his basic intentions. For example, my early song, We Hate Tottenham, which goes, We hate Tottenham and we hate Tottenham. We hate Tottenham and we hate Tottenham. We hate Tottenham and we hate Tottenham.
We are the Tottenham haters.
You see, I still don't know what that song is trying to say.
For me personally, I think the theme of hating Tottenham comes across quite strongly.
Oh, really? I never thought of that.
So, you're also the man behind some of the great playground songs of the 1970s. And for me, there are three things which sum up the 70s. Watergate, the miners' strike, which brought down the Ted Heath government, and the song My Friend Billy's Got a 10-Foot Willy and He Showed It to the Girl Next Door.
She thought it was a snake, so she hit it with a rake.
And now it's only 4'4". You got into hot water with some of your songs, which have been considered controversial, even blasphemous.
You're referring to Jesus Christ Superstar, Wears Frilly Knickers and a Playtex Bra. Yes, it did cause problems.
So was it perhaps to atone for the accusations of blasphemy that you went on to write a series of popular carols?
Yes, that's right. I think that resulted in my most mature work, We Three Kings of Leicester Square, Selling Ladies' Underwear.
I've always found the central section of that piece intensely moving. I'd like to read from it, if I may.
I'd be honoured.
Star of wonder, star of light, Tarzan set his pants alight.
This all came together in what I call my opus magnus magnuson. Tarzan in the jungle, had a bellyache, wants to go to the toilet, too late.
I understand that the lyrics there are allegorical.
Yes. Tarzan is actually me, and it wasn't the jungle, it was Alton Towers.
David Baddiel, thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. Every Friday morning, ladies and gentlemen, every Friday morning. No, we've got to talk on this. Where we go? Ladies and gentlemen, every Friday morning, I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do for the topic of material? What am I going to do for the topic of material? I haven't written any topic of material. What am I going to do for the topic of material? Come Friday night, I'm thinking, who needs material? I'll go on here, I'll make a funny noise. Those baskets won't notice. So I start off by making a noise like a car. And this is going quite well, so I throw in a bit of horse racing commentary. And it's Willie Carson coming up from John Joe and Hill. And I can see Willie Carson's fat buttocks straining through his skin tight jumpers. And then there's the Times. When my voice becomes a sort of a slow, slow slip. Oh, it's such a slow, slippity slide down into mock emotion. And I begin to sound a little bit like the bulldog in Tom and Jerry. That's my boy. Me and you's gonna make a barbecue, son. But now, ladies and gentlemen, here's some real substance. Yes, indeed, something with a bit of real substance and intellectual content. Would you please go crazy for the one and only Mark Thomas, yeah?
Hello, everyone. This is the section of the show where I get to discuss a topical issue
of my choice with you. The thing that's got printed on your sheet that I was going to talk about Salman Rushdie, because quite a few things have actually annoyed me about this, and it's been carrying on for a little while now. Firstly, the first thing that really annoyed me was the fact about 3 months ago, probably about 70% of you never heard of Salman Rushdie. Someone comes up to you in the pub and goes, would you read a Salman Rushdie? Then you go, oh, well, I'll get down a clinic and have a shot for that. That'll clean up. Don't worry about that, mate. Right, and these people who haven't even read the books are coming out with arguments. Like, you get people who are going, well, like Salman Rushdie, right, is a Muslim, right, and he knew that it would offend them, right? So it's his own fault, really, isn't it? He was asking for it, really, wasn't he? Which is like the Judge Pickles approach. The thing, though, that evolves around it is it's all a matter of civil liberties. And I don't think that Britain's got much of a kind of, like, a reputation for being very good at civil liberties. The best chance, the best opportunity that anyone in this country can have for saying whatever they want is on a Radio 1 phone-in. Yeah, just before they go on, they get a quick visit from the brain fairy. They open up the skulls, they take out the brain, they throw up the lager, slam the skull down, push them forward, just about to go on. So what do you think of the situation in South Africa? I'd like to say hello to Brian and Sarah and all the people who work in Spud tonight. Plus, do you know, we actually haven't got a Bill of Rights in this country. We haven't got a Bill of Rights. We haven't got any freedom. We've got the Magna Carta. But I'm not too worried about my sheep's grazing rights, you know what I mean? It's also, we actually leave freedom of speech in the hands of the government and Whitehall. That's mental. That's like thinking, well, who should we get to babysit tonight? Oh, I don't know. How about Charles Manson? Is he free tonight? And also, there is no point in relying on any of the upper classes to actually defend civil liberties. There's absolutely no point whatsoever, because the upper classes don't know what they are. Simple as that. You say, what do you think of civil liberties? I don't know. Is it near Harrods? There's no point there. But we do have blasphemy laws. I want to find out, what do people think about not having freedom of speech but having blasphemy laws? Has anyone got any thoughts about that subject? No. We've got the coach party from the Liberal Democrats. Everyone's just sitting there, oh no, don't look at me. Just sling your hands, what do you think about it? It's taken a few seconds to get through this one. Cabinet Minister, obviously. I think we've got the hope. God, there must be some people with some thoughts up here. I'll go to you first.
Well, I think it's crazy to have blasphemy laws for any religion at all. I mean, apart from this Salman Rushdie thing, I think they should be gotten rid of for Christianity and certainly not applied to any other religion, just scrapped altogether.
That was good. A little thesis there, that was good. What did you think about it?
Well, I mean, I thought it was well known that under a fascist regime, you don't have freedom of speech, do you?
Socialist Worker Party, good day. Have you got any other opinions? There's one over there. Can you shout up into the mic? There, it's kind of hanging from the ceiling, the long thing.
I'd like to say hello to Joe and Tom and everybody.
That was a well picked up one. That was quite an ingenious heckle there. It is quite weird though, the whole blasphemy law business. Actually, I should actually point out that I know the Bishop of Durham, rather, has got into quite a lot of trouble about this, whether Jesus was, like, spiritually resurrected or whether he was physically resurrected. And as a Buddhist, I disagree with him because I think he was physically resurrected. I'm just not sure which species he came back in. That would be great. You're sitting in a restaurant. Waiter, there's a fly. My good God, it's wine. We'll wait for that one. That's good. What we're going to do now is we're going to take a little vote here. I want to ask how many people here in the audience think we should abolish the blasphemy laws, and how many people think we shouldn't. Okay, so we're going to ask all the people who think they should to shout. Okay, how many people think we should abolish the blasphemy laws? Yes! How many people think we shouldn't?
Yes!
Oh, we just had one or two there. Where were you when we needed you in the debate, man? You kept quiet there. Well, obviously, we're going to scrap the blasphemy laws now. They're all worried about that in the church. I hope this, obviously, it hasn't offended anyone at all. But if it has, my name's Billy Graham. Good night.
And now, the education experience. This series takes us right into the exam season in June. So we'll be running an occasional exam help feature, which will aim to help you if you're facing GCSE, A-level or the new 4-hour written paper for the cycling proficiency test.
If you've got exams coming up in the summer, then this is the time you should be thinking about revision. In fact, you'll be thinking about revision up until about 48 hours before your exam, when you should actually start doing some.
If revision isn't to your taste, then you can always cheat. The Mary Whitehouse Experience have managed to obtain some leaked copies of some of this year's GCSE papers.
Right, pen and paper ready at home if you're taking biology. The answers you'll want are as follows. Question one.
The thorax.
Two.
Biosmosis.
Three.
It hops on the female's back.
4A.
Kenneth Baker.
4B.
A small slimy creature with a remarkably tiny brain.
If you're taking English, the answers you'll want are as follows.
Question one.
Because the witches told him to.
2A.
The miller's tale.
2B.
Because she farted in his face.
3A.
Kenneth Baker.
3B.
A small slimy creature with a remarkably tiny brain.
Next week on The Education Experience, we'll be telling you how to fill in 4 pages of foolscap when you only know one fact.
That Kenneth Baker is a small slimy creature with a remarkably tiny brain.
Now, were you in the Soho area around midnight last night? Did you see a 50-year-old man talking to a young girl? Did you hear the girl distinctly say, "I'm 16, I really am"? If so, please phone the Crime Stoppers number immediately, as I need a witness.
Right, now it's time for the punchline experience. Before the show, the studio audience were asked to come up with a punchline to the following joke. What's the difference between Margaret Thatcher and Pamela Bordes? Now, we've collected up all the punchlines on little bits of paper, which I have here in my hand. I'm going to read some of them now, and all the best ones will win a prize, a book of BBC matches. So, here we go. What's the difference between Margaret Thatcher and Pamela Bordes? Even Pamela Bordes wouldn't shag Dennis if you paid her. Now, that is from Lisa Gillespie, and I thought that was really good. So I read it out first. So she's well on the way to a box of BBC matches, I reckon. Here we have, what's the difference between Margaret Thatcher and Pamela Bordes? Margaret is prettier. Yes, that's correct. What's the difference between Margaret Thatcher and Pamela Bordes? None. Both sold themselves and any moral scruples for personal gain at the expense of a nation's credibility. And you can read the rest of that article by L. Tanner in this month's edition of The Listener. Let's see. Now, this is a good one. What's the difference between Margaret Thatcher and Pamela Bordes? Answer, the light bulb. Tom Pawley, who's never really recovered from Salvador Dali's death. What's the difference between Margaret Thatcher and Pamela Bordes? None. They're both too old. And that's from Bill Wyman. Good. Well, that'll do, because this green light's come on, so that means we've had enough. Now, personally, I think it should go to Lisa Gillespie for the shagging Dennis joke. So where's Lisa? Well done, Lisa. Box of Beef Snatches. Big round of applause for Lisa Gillespie, Lisa. Right, now it's time for our comedy serial, All Cozy at Home in the Family House.
Oh, what a lovely house. It's so snug and cozy and lovely and cozy and snug. Oh, I do like pressing the doorbell. It's such a reassuring sound.
Hello, Mother.
Hello, Son.
I do so like being in the one family.
Oh.
My, that armchair looks comfy.
Don't sit there. That's your father's place.
Hello, Mother. Hello, Brother. I'm at university. Ooh, that armchair looks comfy.
It's your father's place.
Oh!
Dear, oh dear. For a moment there, we were sounding a bit like our stereo system, which is just one of the many things which we own. Oh, hello, darling.
Hello. I've just reversed into the bloody garage. Where's my tea?
Oh, you grumpy old so-and-so.
I suppose I am, really.
How much is the house worth now, darling?
Still a lot. We've had to convert the basement so that your mother can move in. Otherwise, she's going to a home.
Darling, are there any black people in the world?
Well, let's have a look. No, not one.
Oh, good.
Samantha, why is that rugby shirt you're wearing 10 times too big?
It's to make me look about 3 years old and still daddy's girl. It would break his heart if he knew I was menstruating.
But you're 37. I'll get it.
Darling, do you know, just seeing you standing there in your Wellington boots and your garden shears makes me feel so comfortable.
All right, I'll just go and get them then.
Hello.
Hello, Vicar. What brings you here?
I've no idea. I think I have to appear roundabout now to reassure everyone that the outside world is peopled not with hoodlums and lunatics, but with vicars. Also, it rhymes with knickers. Well, suppose I'd best be off now, then. Goodbye.
Blimey, what on earth else is going to happen?
Well, once this crazy palaver is all sorted out, I should think we'll all breathe a huge sigh of relief. And then, just when everyone thought it was all over, Mr. Frobisher from next door will come round with the pair of wife fronts that Father lent Mrs. Frobisher to clean her windscreen with, but that Mr. Frobisher found in her glove compartment and got the wrong idea about. That'll be him now.
Don't worry, I'll sort this out. He's not the only person whose wife I've lent pants to. Hello, Mr. Frobisher.
Goddamn, hello, Mr. Cozy, huh? Who's been a naughty boy then, huh? Here's Johnny.
Yes, Mr. Frobisher from next door is Jack Nicholson with a chainsaw. That means that next week's episode of All Cozy at Home in the Family House can go one of three ways. A, the Cozies get brutally massacred. B, the vicar comes back with some of his pants and everything is all right. Or C, something else happens suggested by you. If you have any suggestions, please write to the Mary Whitehouse Experience, BBC Broadcasting House, W1A 1AA. We will use the best idea. And whoever sent it in will win a motorcycle holiday in Bali. You've been listening to the Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Thadil, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Mark Thomas, Joe Brand and Skint Video. The producer was Bill Dare.